This is the Citizen of Heaven podcast, number 257, Inspiration. I'm Hal Hammonds, Citizen of Heaven, your embedded correspondent in Satan's world. Thanks for listening, sharing, and subscribing. What inspires you? And what exactly is inspiration anyway? To help me find the answer, I brought on some ladies who have been inspiring me of late, the hosts of the Book Fair podcast, Trisha Culp, Amanda Payne, and Elizabeth Nowlin. The link is in the show notes. In the first part of our conversation, we discussed the Bible as the epitome of inspiration and how well or how poorly our human efforts have been in replicating that. As a preacher, I always think of 2 Timothy 3, verses 16 and 17 when the word inspiration is mentioned. The Bible is a source of all that's good and true for Christians because it comes from the one who defines good and true for us. Nothing humans can write will ever be as good or true as God's word. But which ones do you think come closest?
I am famous for never answering these kind of questions the same way twice, because it's in that moment when I read it, what did I feel at that moment was standing out to me? I don't have a forever most inspirational. A book that we do commonly talk about being so touched and so inspired by in my home is A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. It is a book that we read long ago with our In Real Life book club when we could have never imagined a podcast. And it was probably one of the first few when I joined. And it was such a wonderful telling of a different life than I could have imagined. Daily struggle. And the quest for a better life and the belief that that better life lied in education. There is a part in the book where the grandmother is the original immigrant, and she's telling her daughter, you have to read to your kids. Like, I don't know, that seems to be the thing. And I mean, we don't really have any books or money to buy books, but here's a King James Bible and here's Shakespeare. Maybe this will get you through. It was just like this belief that surely there was some magic in these pages that would change your life. And it did. And so it's not a spiritual understanding, but on the other hand, she did direct her to the Bible. She did say, in these pages is something that changes people and makes their life better. And that's always a top of my list for a book. If you just want your heart to be touched and you want to be met in your own quest for more, here's a story about that.
That was also on my list.
No, sorry.
But the way that question was phrased, it popped into my mind. Hal, we love the quote by Andrew Peterson, if you want a child to know the truth, tell him the truth. If you want a child to love the truth, tell him a story. You know, you're right. We're not going to revere any story as we do God-breathed scripture. Like, that's obviously not special. That's on another level, you know? But all good literature asks questions about the depth and meaning of the human experience. Whether you're even going back, like, pre-Christian to things like the Odyssey and the Iliad, or whether you're talking about something recent and literary. And the other beautiful thing about fiction is that you interpret it through the lens of your own worldview and perspective. I would rather listen to a story from someone I don't agree with their worldview than listen to them give a speech. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I had thought about A Tree Grows in Brooklyn as well. It's just such a pure story of growing up and experiencing the world and a family survives hard things and growing up, but just so much beauty. Another one that came to my mind is Mansfield Park by Jane Austen. Karen Swallow Pryor, a modern Christian sort of thought leader in the literary and classical space, she says that Jane Austen was the last great Christian novelist. And all of her works are so imbued with virtue and, even though it's funny and satirical and she's poking at people, there is so much undergirding of truth. And I think Mansfield Park in some ways shows that more than any of her works. It shows, I mean, to me, it has one of the most heinous villains in all of literature. The aunt in that book is like, to me, she's just a dragon. Like, she's just one of the most horrible human beings. It doesn't seem that way at first blush, but then the more you read her, you're like, oh my word, the way she treats people. This is terrible. And, you know, Fanny has to go through so much about finding her own place in the world and trusting her own values and her own virtue, even when the powerful people around her are saying something different. So that's another one that I would put in this category.
This was a hard one. And I think I'm going to echo what Elizabeth was saying, that this is just kind of the one right now. This is the way I'd answer this question right now. Because this gets to what Trisha is saying, is that what makes, fundamentally, what makes great literature classic, great, good, is that it talks about what is fundamentally real in the human experience. In other words, it points to God fundamentally. So there's these breadcrumbs of truth, even if the author doesn't intend it. So I went with, actually, this author would have did intend it, and it's my boy G.K. Chesterton. And his fiction work, his fiction work, The Man Who Was Thursday. And I've talked about it on our podcast recently, but I can't get it out of my mind. And so it really just rose to the top of the choices I was considering for this question. You think you're getting a typical detective fiction story, a mystery. You have Gabriel Syme, who's a new policeman for the Metropolitan Police, and his job is to infiltrate an anarchist group in order to stop a bombing. And this is, I believe, pre-World War I. So anarchists were the thing.
They were the thing.
They were just the thing to be. So
let's old as new again.
Right? So it starts out, there's definitely humor in it, but it pretty soon takes a turn and you realize I'm on a roller coaster right here and I don't exactly know what's going on. But I think he purposely wants to disorient you. That's pretty much the point. I think what he's ultimately saying is that just simply this world is not our home. This is the cursed kind of cracked mirror image of reality, which is our home in heaven with God. You know, this is the Eden that failed, that is barren and a wasteland. So going through the looking glass, you realize Chesterton is talking about modernity, you know, what the lies us moderns believe about the world, and that that's not real. And so it has to be turned right side up or up, seemingly upside down to be right side up, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And the tone, the pace, the silliness that's laid on top of this message, it's kind of like if C.S. Lewis wrote a book with the actor Robin Williams. It is okay, a wild a ride. Yeah.
I have to catch up to that thought.
Yeah, it's a wild ride, but it is fantastic. And it's definitely one that is worthy of rereading because I've read it twice now and I definitely see things more clearly each time. It's just fantastic.
I'm not surprised that we go back a few decades or maybe a century or two to get some examples of this because, as several of you have already mentioned, authors in times past have almost by necessity been rooted in the Bible. Obviously, there are exceptions to that, Oscar Wilde or whatever. But there are plenty of authors, you could talk about Louise May Alcott or Harriet Beecher Stowe, who deliberately inserted their religious feelings and teachings and philosophy into their books. They saw this as almost an extension of their faith, even if they weren't really telling a spiritual story. They were telling a moral story, and that was a large reason why they wrote what they wrote. They are deliberately trying to insert good and truth into the world, and they drew from the Bible as their primary source. And so it's not surprising to see tales of decency and heroism and that sort of thing. Do you think that modern novels obviously do not draw from that as consistently as it seems others in the past did, but do you think some of them do?
Oh, I definitely think some do, but I also think the larger portion now is actively speaking another message in the same way that those authors were speaking into their faith. If I won't tell you a story about God, then I'll tell you a story that looks like him and that upholds his principles. Now we do have a lot of authors who are still bringing their own philosophy in, but it is a different worldview. Certainly not to say every book now is trash, but we just do have a new philosophy that is coming through strong in today's literature.
Yeah, I think a lot of the best examples of writers that do write with this worldview are some children's authors, which is good to get that. It's coming back, at least, in certain sections. Estee Smith and Indi Wilson are great modern children's authors and I guess YA classification that really are looking to show the true good and beautiful. And there are some, but not much. It's hard for the trajectory to be headed towards godly things when the water we swim in, the worldview, has switched from truth comes from without to truth comes from within. And now we are all little, our own little gods, our own divinities, which is why self-actualization is like the highest virtue. It's the nirvana these days. So it is harder to find in literature and in art, and beauty is harder to find, I think, in these areas as well. And I have one more thing to say about this. I just love it when people kind of stumble upon the truth and actually put out art, media, literature that has these messages. And I think of Disney's movie Soul, S-O-U-L, which I think is one of the most pro-life movies ever made. And that had to have been a complete accident.
Yeah, for sure. We liked it too. We were so surprised.
Seems a little off-brand.
It did.
Yes, it does, unfortunately.
We're like, whose idea was this?
I remember hearing a quote from Michael Medved, who's a Jewish social commentator, et cetera. And he, speaking of movies, he said that sometime in the 60s, I think, or the early 70s, there was a major paradigm switch. It used to be in Hollywood, the overarching theme was do your duty. And at some point during this formative time, when, Vietnam, civil rights, Watergate, all that kind of thing, there came a switch and the theme became follow your heart. And especially in Disney, I think that shows up. And going to the idea of finding your own truth, et cetera, Batman, Dirty Harry, Iron Man, these characters, these heroes of ours are people who write their own rules. There are people who know better than the establishment. They know better than society. They only answer to themselves. And we glory in that because we know how broken the system is. And we're looking for something higher than the system, something better and deeper and more noble than the system, which is, I think, a healthy aspiration. But our tendency is, and certainly Hollywood's tendency, is to find better humans to follow after. More noble humans to follow after. And invariably, even despite the best efforts of the writers in question, these heroes will fail us. Iron Man may be the most the best example of that. Someone who tears himself apart because he knows how flawed he is, and every decision that he makes for the greater good turns out to be a bad decision. Mm-hmm. It's not about good intentions. It's about the flaws that are hardwired into your personality, into your mentality, that ought to be driving us toward God, that ought to be driving us toward a deeper truth. But I fear that many aspects of our society have rejected that so completely and so unquestioningly, that option is just not even on the table. It's good to know that there are some forces, even in our society, including your podcast, that drive us towards some higher, nobler thing than we can aspire, than we can accomplish for ourselves.
Well, and I think the idea from reading widely and then measuring it back to our original best and most wonderful book that we hold, which would be the Bible, is to say, okay, do I, in the culture and time that I live in right now, need to be an Iron Man, or do I need to be some other past character that did uphold the system and do the duty?
Captain America.
Captain America, 100%. So,
Team Cap.
Which is required of me right now because I'm measuring against that one standard. You know, there's time when I do need to uphold, and there's a time when I do need to, I mean, there's a time for everything. We have Ecclesiastes there. And so that, I do think you can read all of One Kind and you can think this is the only way to be, this is the only, and maybe if you don't live in that time, it doesn't match up. If you're looking at it a little too literally then, but what is the lesson I need to learn about who I should be in the time I live in?
And also, you know, Amanda, this is a much broader conversation, but Amanda mentioned that, you know, great art will always point to God, regardless of the intent of the creator. I think everything that is beautiful has some God in it, and that includes human beings, right? So we certainly don't want to just immerse ourselves in stories and writings and film from worldviews that may be continually tearing down things that are foundational to our lives as Christians, as believers. Also, there can be a lot of good in things that the authors don't intend there to be that kind of good in. I am a rom-com fan. It's like my palate cleanser between really good books. I love a good rom-com. And whether a rom-com is written by a believer or not, and you basically have to go to like, quote, inspirational Christian fiction to find, you know, something that's really going to fall in the believer category. And so most of them I read aren't. But for example, what I see in that genre and the way people love it, like there are so many romance novels written and have been forever. And why? Like, why are we so drawn to hearing this story over and over again of finding a love that will last? Why? Like the modern ideal would be, you know, like maybe, oh, you don't even need to get married. You can just find a partner. Or most of the time, marriages don't last or relationships don't last. So you shouldn't even expect that. Like that's the modern philosophy. But guess what? That is not what comes out in the literature.
Yeah.
No one wants to read a book where the happy ending is maybe this will last a year or two. Why? We know why. We know why, because God made us for forever love. That's what he made us for. Whether those authors intend to point to that or not, that is always what I see. And I'm like, it doesn't matter how long they've been preaching this. These are still the stories we're telling, because this is what our souls want. So I don't think we need to be afraid of literature written by people who come from another perspective. But there is a question, of course, of balance and wisdom and, you know, those kind of things.
Thank you for listening to the Citizen of Heaven podcast. Please rate, review, and share so others can access this content. I encourage you also to join the Heaven Citizens Facebook group. There you will find links to related materials, conversation starters, poll questions, and the occasional special announcement. Also, check out the Hal Hammonds channel on YouTube for even more content. Until next time, be strong and courageous, fight the good fight of faith, and do all things in the name of the Lord Jesus. This is Hal Hammonds, Citizen of Heaven, signing off.